40 goals in 49 games. A lot of talk today about Austin Matthews. Surprise, surprise. Maple Leafs beat the Montreal Canadiens 5-2 is the final score. We'll talk plenty about Matthews, plenty about Marner as well. And bottom of the hour, Darren Pang drops by. We'll talk about the St. Louis Blues. And I'm not sure if you saw it, but if you did, you know what I'm talking about. The interview that Panger did with David Backes after the St. Louis-Anaheim game on Wednesday. Also play some audio from David Backes on the 31 Thoughts podcast. Some interesting stuff that the reason it's interesting is it's an unexpected answer that takes us somewhere that I never thought Backes would have taken us in the answer. I'm getting wordy on this. Trust me, you're going to enjoy this little clip from 31 Thoughts with David Backes. Meantime, Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, good afternoon, gentlemen. It's a 5-2 victory for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And front and center, Galchenyuk scores his fifth, Tavares with his 18th, Engvall with his fifth. More on him in a moment, Bourne-y. Mitch Marner finds the back of the net for the 19th time. But Austin Matthews, Anthony Stewart, is now a 40-goal scorer, and he does it in 49 games. You played in the NHL. How impressive is that?
It's very impressive. And I'm trying to think, the only 40-goal scorer I played with was maybe Eric Staal or Olli Jokinen. And for him to do that in a 49-game segment while injured for a good portion of that, that's definitely amazing. And I've talked about it as far as goal scorers go throughout the league in history. He has the best release. When that puck comes off his stick, it could be going anywhere, but most likely it's going in the net. And it just seems the last four or five games, he's really, really trying to get that 40 goal as soon as possible. So maybe he'd be resting the next couple games too. So it's definitely an amazing feat, but I'm just amazed. And I had a pretty good shot. You know, I have some good shots. You see my highlights out there too. That release is next level, and I'm excited to see him next year. If he stays healthy, there's no reason why he can't be scoring 65, pushing 70 goals with that release. So I'm amazed. Congratulations on the feat for sure.
Yeah, the Matthews character is pretty fancy, isn't he? Last night, Mike Fiuta and I were on Sportsnet's pregame show, and we had to pick the perfect player. Put together your perfect player with all the different attributes. You know, pick one who embodies that. And his perfect player for shot was not Alex Ovechkin, but Austin Matthews. Just, you know, the release from multiple angles, like his heat map does not look like Ovechkin's from one spot, right? He scores in such a variety of ways, and I think that's going to keep him effective in terms of the goal scoring race. Like, you can't take away one thing and stop Matthews. He tips pucks in, finds rebounds, one times it, wrists it. He's just, he can put it in so many different ways.
Okay, so that leads me to a question here. Just as a quick aside, when you're talking about, because I saw you and Mike putting together the perfect player yesterday on Sportsnet. What would you do? Okay, let me back this up here. One of the great ways to evaluate player versus player over different generations is to play the 5-versus-5 game. So you take two goaltenders, they're the constants, okay? Equal value at each net. And let's just say you're having the contest between, you know, Bobby Orr and Mario Lemieux. You want to figure out, okay, who's better? So in your mind, you could talk about all the things that go into a hockey player: skating, shooting, hockey sense, all that kind of stuff. Physicality, defense, offense, everything. And you take 5 Mario Lemieux, put them at each position, and 5 Bobby Orrs, put them at each position, drop the puck, who wins the game? And you could do that with Wayne Gretzky versus Gordie Howe and Rocket Richard versus Sidney Crosby, and you sort of go through your mind of what that thing looks like. For the game right now, this might be interesting. If you played that game right now with 5 Austin Matthews versus 5 Connor McDavids, who wins that game?
I'm still taking McDavid, and I can tell you why. It was actually another point that Mike Fiuta made last night. If you watch the way that, like, the evolution of Sidney Crosby's career has gone from, like, a rookie to, like, the abuse he took and the way he learned to push back and fight when it gets ugly and, you know, kind of get aggressive with other people, I think that made him, like, a grinder star. McDavid has got an element of that game where he doesn't like taking garbage either, and he takes a ton of flack out there. You know, Matthews, you never really see him get his ire up. You never really see him, you know, in too many of these intense battles. And this is not a knock on Matthews. It's the way he plays. He finds soft spots and shoots it in the net. But I think McDavid exists within within the ugly stuff a little bit better right now. And I think anytime you're talking 5-on-5, you can't avoid that stuff if you want to have success. So I like that element in McDavid's game.
Stewie, what do you think? 5 Connor McDavid's versus 5 Austin Matthews. Drop the puck. Yeah. Who wins?
Someone brought this to my attention on Twitter the other day. Why do we always have to mention the same two in the same conversation every single time? They're both amazing players. I'm going to have to go with McDavid just because just seeing his speed and his dynamic, poise with the puck, and he can be going 1-on-2. He's doing what, you know, Connor Bedard did in the under-18s. He's doing that in the NHL against men every single game. And whether he's coming down on Weber or any of the top D, he's just at a different level with the puck. So that's nothing against Matthews, but that's what I'm saying is when you're putting together that perfect player, Matthews, that release, if you ask me who's taking that final shot in the slot, it's got to be Austin Matthews because of that release.
Hey, how about Bedard, by the way? Did he tied the great Anthony Stewart at the U18s
yes.
for goals by a Canadian?
He passed me, man. These young punks, man. They bumped me down to 4. I was 2nd before the tournament. Now I'm down to 4. I want to be like Mr. 3000 and come back saying, hey, you know what? You're eligible to play in one more tournament. I come back and light these guys up.
That guy is not just so our listeners have a sense of how good Connor Bedard is, and he was granted exceptional status, the first player ever in the Western League. Connor Bedard is not draft eligible until 2023.
What happens if he's NHL ready before he's ready to be drafted?
Then the NHL has to make an exceptional player rule.
And that's why, and everyone says, well, my kid's elite, and I coach kids that are 1 year younger than this guy, and I'm like, they're nowhere close to be able to play amongst the best of the best, not just in Canada, but on the world stage against guys 2-3 years older. This kid's going to be a star.
Look, Bedard, man, he buried a backhander from the hash marks.
What was that?
Rush. I don't know. Yeah. The degree of difficulty on that shot is like a diver, like in the Olympics. It was absurd, that shot.
Yeah, and he did it like almost casually. Like, getting there, he's hustling. But the actual release on the backhand, like, it just looks like he's taken that backhand a million times, because he probably has. Like, the kid walks into the Western League this year, right? So he's playing with the Regina Pats. And everyone's like, okay, let's see how long it's going to take him to get used to the league. And it became pretty obvious within, like, the first 5 or 6 games with Regina that Connor Bedard was, you could make the argument, the best player in the Western League as a 15-year-old. Kid's not 16 until July.
Honestly, I can't get over that shot, Jeff. I didn't play in the NHL, but it wasn't because I don't have hands. Like, I can do those sort of things. And, like, if you ask me skating forward to hit the top corner going away from my body off my backhand with no one on the ice, I need a bucket of pucks. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, he's a remarkable player. Matvei Michkov, by the way, the Russian kid who's similar. That's going to be quite a race for first overall pick come 2023. There's some great young player. It's funny because we look at Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews and you say to yourself, well, how can anybody be better? Well, there's some kids coming. You know, like we talked about, like the one thing about the McDavid group, let me get your thoughts on this, guys. 2005, the game changed, right? Crackdown on interference and obstruction became more of a skating game. Carolina realized that quickly. They were able to realize this is a foot speed game now, and they got out of the gate before everybody else and won the Stanley Cup in 2006. Then the rest of the league caught up and sort of smartened up to what this league was going to turn into. But there are a whole bunch of hockey players that had to change the way they played. All of a sudden, it was like, okay, I need to break my instincts and learn how to play a new way. It was like a whole league, but not just a league. Like, everybody in hockey had to stop playing a certain way and start playing a different way. But the thing about Connor McDavid's group is it seemed as if that was the first group to make it to the NHL who didn't have to relearn their game. For them, that was just the game. They didn't have to break any habits. They just started playing hockey that way. So you could make the argument that the McDavid group was the first to do it. Connor McDavid was the best of that bunch. But I think we'd be foolhardy to say that there's not going to be someone that comes along that's better than Connor McDavid. And we might be looking at it right now with another Connor, and that's Bedard of the Regina Pats. He is that. I mean, listen, Connor McDavid dominated minor hockey, either with, you know, the Marlies or with YSE before that. Like, he was phenomenal. Bedard's the same way. And it's another example of a player that's just grown up in this environment and in an environment, Stewie, and you know this better than me and Justin, where you have individual skill training at every single facet of the game from an extremely young age. Right, Stewie? Like, yeah. These guys are getting it early.
Yeah, and I'm on the ice with the pros this past winter with Matt Nichols guys, too. And, you know, from a skill standpoint, I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to bring out a couple of my Bantam kids because from a skill standpoint, they are just as talented. And I go back to when Connor McDavid, I think he was in Pee Wee. One guy I used to coach was on the ice with him, and he just retired from pro. He played some East Coast League and AHL. And he said Connor McDavid at 13 was a better hockey player than him, and he played 7-8 years pro. So the evolution of the game, like, get ready. There's going to be some superstars coming where, you know, I'm coaching some of these games in minor bantam, and there's these plays that are happening, and they're coming back to the bench asking me, well, what am I supposed to do there? I'm like, I don't know. I've never seen that play before. I haven't seen that move before. I don't know.
That's hilarious. And, I have no idea what it is.
It's not just Canada. It's the U.S. The U.S. guys came down here and put a beating on us. The Russians, Pee-wees came down last summer, and just the skill of the game, and it's amazing to watch. And that's why, Jeff, you're always asking, what are you doing on the ice? I'm there learning and seeing the evolution of the game because it's definitely amazing seeing these kids. And I can't imagine. I'm seeing these kids at 14, 15, I'm like, at 25, like, they may be just as good or better. I don't know. But McDavid right now, he's on a different level. You got to give him his credit. And until someone comes back and passes him, McDavid is the guy right now.
You have a thought on that one, Justin? How players are, you know, listen, we assume that no one's ever going to be better than Connor McDavid, like, just based on his skill set, his speed, sense, all of it. But we might be looking at one right now in Bedard.
Well, you can't go faster than McDavid. I don't think, like, can you? I think we've maxed out the speed of the game.
I don't know. But hang on a second. Pause on that. Because haven't we said that for every single generation? Like, we said that about, you know, Yvonne Cornwallier. No one's going to skate faster than the Roadrunner. Now, and then, you know, the next generation comes along and it's, you know, the high-flying Oilers and people are leaving Yvonne Cornwallier in the dust. Every generation says, okay, this is as fast as hockey can go. Go back and look at hockey 15, 20 years ago. And doesn't it look slow?
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe there's another percentage left to go in that category. I don't know. But it's, you know, I'm not one of those. I don't believe that there aren't going to be other generational talents that are going to come blow the league apart. But, you know, to Stewie's point, like, these guys coming up with skill training to levels that, like, I can't even comprehend. I think the game is really going to evolve in terms of just the way that Austin Matthews controls pucks, like grenades that get thrown to him. Like, I think the way players control pucks is going to change it to a different level. Like, you know, throwing guys sauces at their knees and letting them knock it down, Svechnikov-ing the puck at different areas of the ice, throw a Svechnikov dump in at some point. Like, there's going to be more puck control out there over the years.
I think, yeah, you know what? That is a really good skill, too, that I don't know, and Stewie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that players work on enough at young ages, and that's receiving bad passes. You know, what's the old saying? You can't give a great player a bad pass. Like, you couldn't throw a bad pass at Mary.
I'm not going to give them that much credit. The kids don't focus on passing. And if I had, and Ziggy came to one of my schools and started running some practices, and he's like, you kids don't know how to pass. And I said, well, I'd be out of business if I had a passing clinic. So I think just the comfortability with the puck, and handling it and receiving it, I think is a little bit better. But I think the skill in Canada, I think, is a little bit behind from some of these other teams. Like, I've seen some of these Russian kids come over, and they're just there. They're poised with that puck. So I think as you get older, they get a little bit better, but they still got to work on their passing. I'll tell you that.
That's funny about a passing clinic. Like, how unsexy is that? Like, I'm going to put my son in an 8-day passing clinic this summer.
But if you do it for basketball, you would do it. For baseball, you'd work on, you know, throwing, mechanics of the game. Yeah, for sure.
Wait a minute. My kids do it. I mean, Stewie, I'm sure you have coaches that handle it as well. Like, kids go to do edges all the time. You want to talk about, like, a boring clinic? Like, geez, I'm their dad and I'm bored.
Watching
some of this, right?
Someone just texted me. If you're doing a passing clinic, we're in unenrolling from Stuart Hockey. I just got the text. Got the ping.
2-week passing clinic, although it's important, man. Like, why not?
Stewie's out there just Gordon Bombaying it with a pack of eggs. Just.
what a league.
All right, back to the Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens. One thing that that a few people have noted as well along the way here, we should probably have a conversation about it. So Mitch Marner scores last night, his 19th. Mitch Marner has 66 points. If it were any other season, if it weren't Austin Matthews chasing 40 goals, would we be sleeping this much on a Maple Leaf is third in the NHL in scoring? Like, really quietly, maybe not so quietly because it's Toronto, everything is loud, but comparatively in Toronto, Mitch Marner is having a season for the ages here for a Maple Leaf.
Yeah, this is, he's having a season that's worth $11 million per season, you know? There's so much complaining over the contract, and I think justifiably so. It didn't go well. It shouldn't have been for so much. I think you can make that case pretty clearly, but you can't say that he's not worth the money you're paying him when he's putting up numbers like he's putting up.
He's being paid to be a top three player in the league, and is he?
For sure, I think so. But I think now with the whole media and the Canadian division, I think the hockey world's saying, well, there can't be four great players playing on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Matthews can't be that good. Tavares can't be that good. Nylander, no. Marner, there's no way. So I think there's just that lack of respect, and I think these guys are going to be motivated, especially in the playoffs now, because I think this is going to be Toronto's welcome to the NHL moment, where I honestly could see them going all the way and making the finals. And Marner, I don't think, has really gotten his flowers this year. He is a top guy in the National Hockey League, and he can make plays. He can do it from the flank, and just as you know, his chemistry with Austin Matthews and just the way that he makes plays, that's amazing, and I think that should get a lot of credit and headlines as well.
You know what, if anyone's going to be teaching a passing clinic, Stewie, it's that guy.
Yep.
Because
okay,
guy,
get the Red Bull cans out. We're going to get the Red Bull cans out, pass the Red Bull can, and it explodes. Two hard laps, let's go.
What's up, Justin?
I say the problem with guys who are that, like, sort of out of this world at those skills is they can't teach it. I don't even think they know what they do. It's like, you know, Wayne Gretzky trying to be a coach or whatever. It's like, why can't you see what I can see? It's so hard to teach, you know, what Mitch Marner does.
Rocket Richard, I think, lasted one, maybe two games behind the Nordiques bench before he just threw in the towel and said, I can't do this. I can't teach this. I just scored goals. Don't ask me how. Don't ask me to teach it. Okay, bottom of the hour, Darren Pang is going to stop by, analyst for the St. Louis Blues. So Panger had a really interesting interview with David Backes on Wednesday night. Backes, of course, a member of the Anaheim Ducks. Wednesday was most likely his final game in front of his former fans and some former teammates in the St. Louis Blues. It was a really nice sort of emotional moment for David Backes. So Elliot and I talked to Backes last night for the 31 Thoughts podcast. It should be out today if it's not out already. And part of the interview, and I want to play this clip for you guys and get your thoughts on it. Towards the end of it, I asked Backes, you know, was there one guy in the NHL that pushed him to be better and brought out the best in him? And I expected him to talk about, you know, all those St. Louis, Chicago battles. I expected Jonathan Toews. I expected that to be the answer. What we got was something really interesting, really different, and I want to get your thoughts on this. So here's David Backes talking about who in his history pushed him the most and brought out the best in him. Of all the players that you played against, was there one player that brought out the best in you that you look back on and you say, I couldn't have achieved a level that I got to without competing against this guy? Was there one guy in your life that brought that out of you?
Well, I'll tell you, the guy who brought the competitiveness and the fire out of me the most was actually a teammate of mine, DJ King, and the minor first got there. I was admittedly I was probably 6'3", 205, coming out of college, kind of string bean, very soft. And we'd be in line for a drill and he'd cross check me in the arm where I didn't have shoulder pads. And I hated him. I mean, he was my teammate and I hated him. This like big tough guy. What was I going to do to him? Like absolutely nothing. And he's given it to me in practice as my own teammate. I'm like, if I could not see this guy again, that would be better. I would be better for it. Cause I wanted to just get away from him. So then that was the rest of that year after my college season. The next year, we're in camp, and I was one of the last cuts, and I get sent down. The only guy without a room is DJ King, without a roommate. And so I either had the choice of going solo and absolutely slapping this guy in the face who's gigantic and tough, or bunking up with him where I would probably be a punching bag for the whole season. And so for some reason, I chose to be the punching bag. But he taught me so much that year that some of it was alcohol induced, but we'd be out late and he'd push me or something and I'd shy away again. He's like, man, are you going to take that all year? Like, if you don't stand up for yourself, you're going to take that and guys are going to run your show. Like, you don't have to be the toughest guy. You just have to show up and stand up for yourself. And all of a sudden things started to click. And, you know, we might have pushed each other back and forth, but, you know, he taught me so many lessons along those lines. Or in game, he'd be like, that guy thinks he owns you. You better go back at him. And then all of a sudden somebody else would be tucking tail when I was the guy tucking tail before. And I'd be like, this guy gets it. And then if it got too far, I always had the big guy behind me to be like, Kinger, take care of this guy. And he would do it. So, from my own team, he certainly brought out the best in me. And I don't think I get anywhere near where I am today without, you know, those lessons early in my career. And then, you know, Tave certainly made me bring my game to another level. I think I played my best defensive game against Crosby, just knowing that he's the best player in my generation, him and Ovechkin. We can have that debate later, but, you know, a hard match against Sid where it was like, I got to be on my game. I can't make a mistake positionally or I'm not going to, you know, recover against him. And I got to make him think about anything else besides playing hockey because that's the only way I survive these games. And I don't think it was pleasurable for him because every whistle I was seemingly giving it to him, but that's how I had to play in order to have success against him. So I feel like that brought out the competitive edge in me a lot too.
That's David Backus on the latest edition of 31 Thoughts, the podcast. I think it's out now. If not, it'll be out by the end of today. So DJ King, the answer, who for my money in his era was one of the more underrated tough guys in the NHL. Stewie, what goes through your mind when you hear that story from David Backus that DJ King would get on him in practice, smack him in practice, push him, shove him, trying to bring out a more aggressive Tiger in David Backus?
Yeah, basically bullied him into turning him into a great player. But I don't think people understand how tough DJ Kings are. Like, there's a bunch of guys that I wouldn't want to fight, but that guy would ruin your season. Like, he could break your face, where if he was playing tonight, there'd be no problems in the league with him on your team. And he's one of those guys, great guy, great teammate. And just but David Backus talking about him shows how great of a teammate he was. But with David Backus, you know, that's how he played. He learned a lot. And, you know, there's guys that you say, are they an easy five? Backus would look you in the eyes after he's, you know, after he slashed you, and he would make sure that you knew that you were, that he was here to play. And he was a tough player, tough to play against. And he was a great teammate as well. My brother played with him for 3 years in St. Louis. And, you know, he was a great, great leader. And people are seeing him now. He's not really putting up a lot of numbers. This guy was a 30 goal guy. 30 goals, 60 points, 150 pims, leader. And, you know, they struggled a little bit in St. Louis. I wouldn't be surprised if they won a Stanley Cup because he was one of those leaders. I think he deserves a Stanley Cup.
You know what's funny is hearing David Backus describe himself as a string bean and soft in college.
Yep.
I played in college against David Backus. I once told him to calm down in a scrum because I was just like, enough, man. Literally just like, what are you so hostile about? It's just a game. You know, he was not those things, but good to hear that someone else brought it out of him. You know, and we all get motivated in different ways. For me, you know, I had a teammate that motivated me not because they outwardly pushed me, but because we were so clearly aligned in what we wanted from our careers. We were both like 6'2 right wingers on the same college team. Like, we had the same opportunities. And as a freshman coming in, it was like, I need to be better than that guy. And that was motivating for me. So whatever it is, wherever you find your internal motivation, great. You just got to find it from someone.
Jeff, did you ask him any Hitchcock stories or no?
He told a great one. He told a great Hitchcock story about how guys hated him and how Hitchcock knew him. How Hitchcock, it's a sort of little tease to the pocket. We did, I think he might have brought Hitchcock up, and how there was one meeting where Hitchcock got the entire team to stand up and chant, the coach is an a-hole. in unison over and over and over, because Hitchcock knew how much the guys hated him.
And they had a bad game. They were having a bad game. They were having a bad game one time. My brother was telling me that he was just going around the room, and he finally came to my brother and he said, "Stuart, you got alligator arms." So my brother didn't even know what that meant. Like, is he cheap? Is he afraid to fight? Like, he didn't even know. So he just said, "Stuart, you got alligator arms."
Okay.
That's awesome. Yeah, so there is some good Hitchcock stuff in there. And actually, I asked them if it was, you know, in 2010, going into the Olympics, David Backus was playing for the United States. There was a string there, you guys will recall, where he fought Jonathan Toews from the Blackhawks, he fought Corey Perry from the Anaheim Ducks, and he fought Rick Nash from the Columbus Blue Jackets, all three players that were playing for Team Canada that year at the Olympics in Vancouver. And I asked him if that was deliberate. And the answer is interesting. Let's put it that way as a tease. You can, wherever your favorite podcatcher is, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Sportsnet.ca, that's on the latest edition of 31 Thoughts, the podcast, our interview with David Backus. Another great interview by David Backus, conducted this previous Wednesday by Darren Pang, analyst for the St. Louis Blues. We'll get on the Blues page and more on David Backus here as Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590. The Fan Panger is up next. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday at noon. Jeff Merrick, Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart. It's Hockey Central. We are pleased to be joined now by Darren Pang, St. Louis Blues analyst. And first off, Panger, how are you? Thanks as always for stopping by. It's always a better day for all of us when we get to talk to you. And I got to tell you, we just played a clip from David Backus a second ago. Elliot and I talked to him on the 31 Thoughts podcast. Man, that was an outstanding interview you did with him post-game on Wednesday. What did you take away from it?
Well, Jeff, Justin, and Anthony, thanks for having me on. Thanks for the words, Jeff. Important moments for individuals, I think. And I think in looking back at it, I think that the St. Louis Blues, and in particular Mike Caruso, does a great job of preparing everybody for it. And, you know, before the game, we did know what was going to happen. We knew that the Blues players were going to stay on the ice. And that's the great veteran leadership of the St. Louis Blues and the friendships that David has had with the players. And, you know, his parents were there as well. And, you know, then they told us that they, you know, that his wife, Kelly, had set up the video that we were going to play. So I just think overall, everybody just was prepared for it and ready for it. The only guy that wasn't prepared for it, I think, was David Backus, in terms of the emotion and just how incredible it was. And he's always been that way. I've been here for a large part of his career, and I've seen the ups and downs. And I've seen a guy that was torn from the inside when they lost in 2016. And the decision that he and the Blues made when he ended up leaving. So, but all in all, guys, it was one of those great moments. And I'm thankful to say that, like, David Backus sent me a text this morning, and he must have, you know, the last couple of days, it's probably been overwhelming for him. And he just sent a text to say thanks. And he really appreciated the work put into it. So, I mean, that's the kind of person he is. And certainly I really enjoyed being in that moment because of the relationship that we've had over the years.
It was excellent, Panger. I got to say, Elliot and I were watching that in the green room on Wednesday after doing the Ottawa Montreal game, and it was riveting. It was sensitive. It was touching. It was emotional. I don't know how he kept it together during that video, but man, it was so. Elliot and I had him on the podcast. We recorded the interview last night, and I asked him, you know, which player in his history pushed him the most, like he couldn't have achieved a certain level of success if he didn't have this player pushing him. And I expected him to say someone like Jonathan Toews. You know who he said, Panger? He said DJ King. He said DJ King, and when he roomed with him as a rookie, he would always get on him about, you know, don't let anyone run your show and you need to stand up for yourself, and, you know, would be whacking him at practice all the time. How much does that resonate with you? David Backus, you know, he looks back at his career, says, "I couldn't have become as great as I was without DJ King."
That's really remarkable, actually, because, you know, I know he lived at Big Walt's house. Yep. Walt has done that, Big Keith Tkachuk, to several players growing up. And you know, Alexander Steen, I mean, that was one of the more formidable lines, the checking lines. It started the foundation of the Blues being a hard, heavy checking team with Oshie on the right and Steen on the left. But that's funny. That's really something about DJ King. I had no idea. Yeah. About that. And, you know, it doesn't surprise me because I'm sure along the way we'll have guys say Ryan Reeves. I'm just talking about the Blues, you know, family in particular. But, you know, the Ryan Reeves, the Kyle Brodziaks, even Scotty Upshaw's, you know, a lot of these guys that are those heart and soul guys that aren't afraid to tell, you know, top end players to get her going and give them a shot on the shins. That's fantastic to hear.
Yeah, you were around for the Ken Hitchcock era too. Were you surprised that those teams didn't have you know, great success? They had players like Backes, obviously Oshie, Pietrangelo, Shattenkirk, Perrin, Berglund, a young guy named Chris Stewart. I'm surprised that they didn't have more success in the playoffs.
Yeah, so am I, but I absolutely am as well. And I'm not sure why that would be, but those moments, and I remember, I think we landed in Buffalo early in the morning. I got a text that the Blues had traded Eric Johnson for Shaddy and your brother. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, this is anytime you can get a 2-for-1 trade in the caliber of Shaddy and your brother, even though EJ is obviously a terrific player, but the Blues needed depth. I was thinking that was the beginning of it. And I think too, Anthony, I bet there was many times during my 12 years here where I said, there's a 5-year window to win a Stanley Cup. And then that elapsed. And then I said, I tell you what, there's a 5-year window to win another cup, because the foundation and core players were so good, but they couldn't get over the top with Hitch. They got to that 2016 final. They emptied the tank. They were beat up, and San Jose was humming at that particular point. But yeah, you're right. It's a shame, because there was such a great group of players there.
Panger, with this season more or less behind us, I wonder if you could reflect on a couple of guys who were new additions to the team this year, and Torrey Krug and Mike Hoffman, and how their first season as St. Louis Blues went.
Yeah, Justin, it's funny that, and we shouldn't be surprised how difficult it is for guys that sign big deals in a new city. I mean, David Back's a great example, signing with Boston. I mean, it didn't fit right away for some reason, or you know, and then he ended up obviously leaving. But going back, like Torrey Krug, I mean, he's a heck of a player. He's still, you know, he's still right up there in points. He's probably playing a lot more D-zone minutes, 5-on-5 with Justin Falk when he's been in the lineup. He's been out of it for the last couple of games. But all in all, I think he's fit in really, really well. And I think one of the things is, before anybody analyzes the points and that, I think it's his personality to jump into another locker room and fit in. So I think he's been good. I think he's got, I think he's got another level to him. And I think maybe down the stretch, now that we've been without him for a few games, they're seeing Mikkola and Scandella and Parayko maybe take up more D-zone minutes. That might free up Torrey for a little more of those O-zone face-offs and get him going on that side of it. And the other part of it is Mike Hoffman. That, you know, all Doug Armstrong said at the beginning was Mike Hoffman just scores goals. So let's just wait and see if he can help us score goals. Well, I would have to say that he's done a great job of that. Taking him a while to fit in, there's no question. 5-on-5 hockey for Craig Berube it's a demand that you win board battles, that you finish your checks, that you do all those things. But I think as we've seen Mike Hoffman's game, he's proven that his assets as a goal scorer maybe take over for some of the little things that he probably admit he doesn't do that great. You know, he's not going to win many one-on-one physical battles, but what we're finding is he wins it with a stick. So he can get the puck in and out of the zone. And I think at 5-on-5, early in the season, he wasn't a plus player in that area. But now he is, playing with Kyrou and Thomas, and there's something gelling right there. And then the other part is the power play. You know, the Blues were used to a right-handed point man in Pietrangelo. You know, now they got a left-hander in Krug. You know, they're used to Tarasenko being on that right side, who doesn't one-time the puck. And now they've got Hoffman on the right side, who does one-time the puck. So I think everybody's gotten a little bit more unselfish. Selfish is maybe the word, to get the puck to him, selfish for Hoffman to finally shoot the puck the way he shoots the puck. And I think that's why it's all working right now.
You know, you mentioned that line that he's on with Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou. I want to ask you about those two players specifically. The minute that Kyrou steps on the ice, St. Louis is automatically a faster team. And I've been a fan of Robert Thomas for a number of years. I had huge expectations for him this season. The injuries sort of derailed the year for him. What are your thoughts on these two players, Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou?
Well, they're the best off-ice video tandem in the National Hockey League, number one. These two guys, they win a lot of tournaments and they donate a lot of money to charity. So I'll get that out, which is a great thing. The Children's Hospital of St. Louis has been the recipient of some of their monies won off the ice. Now, on the ice, they play like a video game. And, you know, Jordan Kyrou, I'm really impressed with how mature he's gotten on the little things that Craig Berube demands. Heavy stick, heavier stick, more tenacious on pucks, not just one and done. Toe drag a couple of guys, maybe you mishandle a puck and it goes the other way, and not come back hard in your own zone. He's doing those little things, and I think that's why he's been rewarded with the ice time that he's getting and the power play minutes that he's getting. So both of these guys are ultra quick. Thomas is a little stronger on his skates in terms of when he button hooks and stops on a dime, and then he sees and surveys the ice real well. Kyrou's just a, you know, he's from 0 to 60 in very little time. And the other guy in Hoffman's really been good with them. So I think it's another element of the St. Louis Blues. Instead of being that heavy ozone possession, you know, team, now it's okay. Now we've got a team that can actually burn you on the rush. And that's that line right there.
The Blues were sitting inside of the playoff picture for a while here. Was there any worry that this team wasn't going to make the playoffs? And what turned the corner for them? And how do they match up against the Vegas Golden Knights, who looks like it's going to be their first-round opponent in the playoffs?
You know what, Anthony? I think Arizona certainly put some scare into them. I mean, especially when they played that epic seven-game series that they played right in a row. I mean, Rick Tocchet did a great job with that team, and they checked the Blues really hard. But I will say the turning point was a 6. This is just me. I'm not sure if the players would agree. A 6-1 loss on home ice. Billy Husso started. Jordan Binnington came in. Binnington on the ice. You know, it was a passive defending team, and they let Vegas, you know, run around them. I know that one player in particular, Binnington, wasn't happy with some things. I could see him on the ice between commercial breaks. I likely think, and I could guess that they had. Not just him. I'm not just saying him, but I think the entire team hit rock bottom at the end of the game. I don't think the GM was happy. The coach wasn't happy, and the players weren't happy. And the next game, Binnington stopped 50 shots against Vegas. They won the game, and they've been humming ever since. So I'm gonna say that was rock bottom, Anthony, and that's where they turned this around.
Obviously, whoever they draw in the first round is going to be a very, very good opponent. Do you think either Vegas or Colorado are a better fit for them in terms of stylistic matches and their chances of an upset?
Yes, you know, it's funny, isn't it? Hasn't Minnesota done real well against Vegas? You know,
right?
They match
great
up
games.
Well against them. You know,
great games.
Yeah, really great games. I mean, man, the Blues prior to the last maybe couple of games. Have all had one goal games against Vegas, all of them. You know, obviously the 6-1 loss was an exception to that, but they've been close. The Colorado Avalanche, I don't know. If I'm a goaltender, they put me on my heels a little bit. So I think they put doubt in you. They make you not trust your positioning because, number one, with McKinnon, but they've got some real crafty players. And obviously, Makar bringing the puck in from the point, he changes direction. He makes you question your positioning. So, I mean, this is just me. I think the Blues match up well against both teams, but I think more so against Vegas than Colorado.
I'm glad you mentioned those Minnesota games with Vegas, because for my money, those have been the games of the year. Like every single game, those two teams this year has been outstanding. Hey, I want to ask you about Binnington. You mentioned him a second ago. Is he going to get his fight in this year or what? Because I don't know that I've seen a goalie in the NHL more so than Jordan Binnington this season, just dying to have one. Panger, is he going to get his fight in or what?
Yeah. Well, before his career ends, he's going to get his fight in. I guarantee you that. But I think, and I've compared him to, you guys tennis fans growing up?
Yes.
I know I'm older than you guys are, but you know, I first became a Bjorn Borg fan, and I played some tournament tennis, and that calmness and that just that never got rattled. And then as I got older, I sort of morphed into John McEnroe, you know, not going well, yep. Do something to trigger your emotions, get you, you know, maybe it's the ref, maybe it's the ump's fault or your racket's fault or something, but it really is about you trying to change things up. And I think that Binnington does that. I think he uses that psychology to do things, gets pulled from a game, you know, goes by the San Jose bench, goes by their goaltender, tries to stir things up. And yeah, more times than not, you don't see him do that when it's going really well. He's very focused. He maintains good composure. he does that when he needs a spark or the team needs a spark. So will he get a fight? He'd be better off if I was still playing and he could fight me. That would be his best option.
Stewie, go ahead.
Not one of those big fellas. Not one of those big fellas.
Yeah, when it comes to conversation for best player in the world, it's obviously McDavid and Matthews and guys like that too. But I think a player that's very, very underrated is Ryan O'Reilly. And when you, you know, check all those boxes that should be considered, I think he checks a lot more boxes than some of these other guys that are in the conversation. What do you think?
Yeah, well, that's a heavy loaded question because we know how we know McDavid, McKinnon, Matthews, they're different animals. But all I know is when the Blues match up against those three players in particular, Ryan O'Reilly gets the assignment. And somehow Ryan O'Reilly in a combine, you know, wouldn't be regarded as this kind of player because he's certainly not the fastest. He certainly doesn't have the hardest shot. He's probably not the strongest, although pound for pound on his stick, he's probably the heaviest on his stick and doesn't lose many of those one-on-one stick battles. But he takes angles that even great players don't see. Get into point A to B, it's never a swooping game for him, and it's a straight line game, and he cuts them off at the pass. So I tell you, if I'm building my team, I mean, you're building your team around all three of those players, there's no question, but I certainly would want to have Ryan O'Reilly right there beside them because that means you've got a championship-caliber team. The guy's a great person. He works hard. He sets a great example, and he takes responsibility. What more could you ask from a player?
Hey, Panger, one thing this year for us, we've been really hyper-focused on the North Division. We don't really get to watch what's going on everywhere else as much. So imagine how little I feel like I know about the bottom of the West Division. I'm looking at it right now, looking at the three teams from California and the Coyotes. Which team from that group of four there do you think is really trending in the right direction? Which will be most relevant in the playoff picture in years to come?
I think the LA Kings. You know, I think they've got a goaltender that will eventually supplant Jonathan Quick in Cal Peterson, and they've got a couple of other prospects there as well. I think they've done a great job of bringing in some unrestricted free agents from college that have really fit in at the NHL level. You know, not always the top-end draft picks, but I've seen some development in Kempe. You know, we see Iafallo, you know, on that top line. We've seen – I think they're – their depth is exceptionally good. Their draft picks are in the maybe the best in the league. So I think if there was a team, and I like what Todd McClellan does. I know this year might be an aberration. I don't know if he's going to keep that 1-3-1 or that right-wing lock system forever. But in this shortened season, I really thought it's brilliant because the players can't empty the tank every single night. And I think that's why you've seen great years from Dustin Brown and certainly from Anche Kopitar and Drew Doughty. Because I think the system fits what this season is all about. And so that would be my team of the future.
And Byfield's looking nice and real smooth out there as well. That's that would have been my answer as well, Panger. LA looks like great things on the horizon in the future for them. Yeah. Listen, once again, great job on Wednesday with David Backes. That was a highlight of the season, I think, for a lot of people, certainly for him, based on his text to you. And just watching it, you handled it perfectly. No surprise for anyone that's watched your work previous. Great job on Wednesday. Great job as always. And let's see what happens to the St. Louis Blues heading into the postseason, facing off against a heavyweight team in the opening round. Thanks so much for this as always, Panger.
Thanks, appreciate it, fellas. Keep up the great work, okay? Take care,
there
guys.
There he is, the great Darren Pang, analyst for the St. Louis Blues. They're going to have a tough slog in that opening round. Looking like Vegas, man, that is a tough, tough out. We'll take a break, come back here. A couple of minutes left. I want to talk about Travis McKenzie when we come back, who's calling it a radio career today. They're going to do a lot with him, I'm sure, on Writer's Block later on. But a couple of thoughts on Travis McKenzie here as we wrap things up for another edition of Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Don't go anywhere. Okay, welcome back to the program. A couple of minutes here left before we wrap up the this week's edition of Hockey Central. And just want to say a couple of words about Travis McKenzie. Travis is a producer here at Sportsnet 590, The Fan. He's booked me numerous times on various shows that he's worked. He now handles Writer's Block in the afternoon, and today is his final day. And I'll tell you, man, being a producer in this business is challenging. It's tough. There are a lot of times where it doesn't seem very rewarding. And I know it can sort of mentally beat some people down. I've seen plenty of producers come and plenty of producers go, and some have a real optimism when they start. And then by the end, the sort of realities of producing daily radio kind of beat you down. And a lot of that optimism leaves. But Travis McKenzie is someone that, you know, every exchange I've ever had, every phone call, every text has been like delightful and pleasant. And the guy works so hard to make whatever show he's part of better. And the one thing that always stands out to me about Travis is I don't know that I've seen him get rattled. I don't know that I've seen Travis get angry. All I've seen is a really hardworking, dedicated young man who is talented as he is polite. And that's a rare skill in this industry, where your frustration can lead you to having to write a lot of follow-up texts apologizing for your behavior. I don't think Travis McKenzie has ever had to write one of those. So as he calls it a radio career, congrats to Travis.
Yeah, I said that's how you end up getting assigned to work with Blair and Deitch. Those two grumps. You have to put someone positive and happy. I'm kidding, Jeff and Richard. I love you, but you know, maybe it's true. I don't know.
Travis is awesome. Congrats, bud. Like I know, like I did it before, and a lot of my colleagues that are on air have done it before. Great job, and you know, we wish you all the best in what's next for you in your new career. And understand that you did it the right way here at 590, and it was a pleasure and delight every time you texted, every time you called. Always a delight coming on any show that you are part of. Well done, young man. All right, weekend is on the horizon. But first, more programming here on 590. Smith and Jones on The Fan. Stay tuned.